My name is John Beck, and it is my pleasure to co-director the work of Daily Lives. Deanna Rivera and I were undergraduates together at Michigan State University. I remember her from that time as being unbelievably bright, interesting, engaging, and it was my pleasure to come back to Michigan State then as a professor a few years later, and to find that Deanna had taken her degree from Michigan State University, had ultimately ended up coming back as a professional librarian at the MSU Library, and she runs the Cesar Chavez collection here at the MSU Library. Deanna has been a wonderful collaborator in a variety of different ways over the years, and she is just an absolute pleasure of a person to have in our Brown Bag series. So let me remind everybody, do sign in if you haven't signed in, and if you get those little white sheets going around, that's always a plus. So Deanna is here today talking about the extensive collection of poster art that she's been collecting now at the Chavez Collection. And her talk is, oh, by the way, for those of you who might not know this, she also happens to be the mother of fantastic kids, one of them, Diego Rivera, one of probably the premier saxophonists currently in jazz here in the United States. And so Deanna has been helping all of us in a variety of different ways over the years.
And I had nothing to do with that.
Yes. Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh. Well, what can I say? But we'll find out more about that. You can tell me about that sometime later. But the talk today is entitled Huelga, Latino Labor and Poster Art. Please help me in welcoming Deanna Rivera.
Okay, thank you. I may have been engaging. I don't know how engaging I am anymore. However, there is something that has carried over from my undergrad years when John and I were here together. I graduated from the College of Urban Development, actually, and it had a couple of different departments. One was Urban and Metropolitan Studies, and the other one was Racial and Ethnic Studies. And it was in Racial and Ethnic Studies that I got my bachelor's. The concentration was Chicano Studies and Native American Studies. And it was through that interest and that desire to actually learn more about what was written about Chicanos in a formal way that kind of got me going in that way, in that direction towards my degree. I was involved in student activism here. It was a labor of love that helped bring more faculty, that helped bring student organizations and conversations with the administration. During that time, Cesar Chavez would come to campus, and he had been a frequent visitor here, and I had the pleasure of meeting him. I had the pleasure of meeting Richard, his brother, and we actually have some recordings by an interview with Richard here at the MSU Libraries, as well as the voice collection, a voice collection of Cesar Chavez interviews. And of course, Dolores Huerta had been here, I don't know, when was that, maybe 10 years ago, 11 years ago, and she came and met with community members as well as those on campus. So the presence of the UFW has been here since probably the late 60s. 1969, I think, may have been the first time that Chavez was here, having an impact as a person, but also the images that he carried with him in form of the Union icon, the Thunderbird Eagle. Over the years, we were able to acquire a Cesar Chavez collection through the efforts of student activists and the president of the university and the library's director. We established the Cesar Chavez collection in 1995. And it was at that point that we saw that, you know, when you were doing comparative numbers of what our collection, our Chicano Studies collection, looked like in the Big Ten, we must have been like number 7 or number 6. Having gotten support from the university libraries and the provost's office, we had a core of students who helped build that collection by going on the early internet and looking for authors of pamphlets, of self-published books, and material of that nature that helped build our collection. As of late, what we've been doing is working with community activists and donors from not just Michigan, but from across the country, to donate materials to the Cesar Chavez collection. They are ending up in special collections because of the format. You know, of course, it's not the type of material that can just end up on the shelves. And among these materials that come to us are posters. When the poster was being developed in the 60s during the Chicano movement, especially with the farm worker movement, many of the producers of these posters were not thinking in terms of longevity, archival longevity, for this material. So many of these posters were printed on thin paper, cheap paper, actually, brittle paper, newsprint. Some were silk screened. They actually went through the whole process of silk screening. Others were just lithographed. Others were just handmade, actually. With the donations that we've gotten over the years of these posters, they've been donated by people who aren't necessarily folks with archival skills or who have an understanding or appreciation of how to, how many of us really know how to store a poster? You know, most times we just roll it up and stuff it in the, under the bed or up in the attic, and the paper deteriorates. That is the condition that we got a lot of these materials in. Some were folded. Some were duct taped together just to keep together, right? Forget the cellophane, forget the masking tape. We got some duct tape ones. And these were materials that were collected because people knew that they were important. They weren't quite sure what their importance was. They just knew that it was important. And I'm glad that we have folks like that in the community who have ended up giving us their materials. In doing the background work for this presentation, you find, or I found, that some of the posters that, you know, we think are common out there, that are popular images in our pop culture, are really not collected by a lot of people. There's very few libraries that actually have some of the posters that we have, or we have in common some of the posters that a consortium in California might have. So we're really, really lucky to be part of a growing presence in collecting poster art, Chicano poster art, and in particular, labor poster art. So that is an introduction, I guess, to what we have in the libraries. I want to kind of put out there that if there's materials that you have from the UFW era, the Cesar Chavez era, that, you know, please feel free to have a dialogue with us and see if it's something that we can add to the collection and help build this national collection of posters. Today, I wanted to talk about, or I wanted to show examples of what is referred to as visual rhetoric. that is found in the development of the Chicano poster art movement in the U.S., in particular with its focus on labor and the farm worker movement. Looking at visual rhetoric that's provided by the select group of posters, these are found in special collections. I will also be using some images that I found in digital archival repositories that were developed by the University of California Archives and Library System. There's not a lot of other universities that are engaged in putting their posters online right now that I have found. UT Austin, not really. And they have some collection, but I don't think that anyone's a match for what the California system has. We at Michigan State are digitizing our poster collection, and we are making it available, hopefully by the end of the year, under a project called Michelac. The Michigan Chicano Latino Activist Collection, or I forgot what the A stands for, but you know, I'll have to look it up. But among within that system, we will be having some of these labor posters and other posters that are that have been developed for community use and some action or information sharing. According to Lisa Corrigan in her spring article, 2014, on visual rhetoric and oppositional consciousness, visual rhetoric refers to a large body of visual and material practices ranging from the visual arts to interior design, cartography, photography, museums, and public memorials. She credits the Cuban Revolution as effectively, quote, effectively reinventing the poster as a rhetorical medium which essentially created a new visual language, unquote. It is this visual language, this vocabulary of icons that speaks as an oppositional consciousness in the posters of farm labor struggle, actions, and boycotts or huelgas. In 1984, art historian and art professor Shifra Goldman referred to Chicano poster art in the 60s through the 1984s as not just merely, quote, poster art or simply as a collection of individuals making posters, end quote, but rather a Chicano poster movement. She based this on the distinctive and emerging ideology, iconography, and content and social function that it served. And also, I believe, of who it served, and who it served primarily would be farm worker community and its supporters. Understanding the ideology of the Chicano movement, I believe, helps understand the visual rhetoric that is shown in these posters, as well as identifying key icons that have emerged as a result. The poster artists from this time period drew on their bicultural and bilingual backgrounds, which were rooted in primarily a Mexican heritage. These teenage graphic artists through 30-something graphic artists were in the midst of a social hurricane in which issues including cultural nationalism, a search for identity, and the social political concerns had become a part of daily life for them. Key among these concerns was the continuing wage and class disparity between the farm workers who fed the country and the agribusiness that and farmers that owned the land. The evolution of poster making for these graphic artists developed from the utilitarian purpose of the poster to a more developed appreciation for the purpose of the message, the medium for its delivery, and the staying power of the iconography they used. This core of the poster movement during this period grew out of defiance, or out of the defiance of the race and class divisions of the exploited farm worker and their efforts to establish a viable labor union. In addition, issues in urban areas, Detroit, Chicago, San Antonio, Houston, LA, Albuquerque, included inadequate employment, housing, education, and social services, as well as police brutality and civil rights violations that still occur to this day. Poster activity emerged from the artist collectives in the San Francisco Bay and Los Angeles areas who were situated in close proximity to the farm worker communities that were very active in the boycotts. It did not, however, emerge in a vacuum. The poster art did not emerge in a vacuum. As an active student, black, feminist, and third world poster movement was producing anti-war, U.S. foreign intervention, feminist, and ethnic-themed placards. 1970 proved to be a significant marker for Chicano poster makers in the San Francisco area with the founding of galleries or galerias. These included the Galería de la Raza, La Raza Graphic Center, the Royal Chicano Air Force, or what's now known as the Royal Chicano Air Force, Centro de Artistas Chicanos, the short-lived Mexicano Art Center, and the Los Angeles-based Self-Help Graphics and Art. Closer to home, the only significant Chicano poster production was that by Chicago's graphic artist Carlos Cortez. His work was based in the Wobbly, or the Industrial Workers of the World Union, and continued until his death in the mid-90s. There's a story that's told, and I've never really been able to verify it, but it was said that Carlos Cortez said that when he died, he wanted his posters given away because he didn't want anything collected, and the value of $2.50 posters being jacked up. So. California artists straddled that line that marked work for political and public issues and personal exhibit quality production. Many times because of collective or colectiva goals, which included serving la causa and not being self-serving by having your name on these posters, but actually being part of the cause. Many poster work went unsigned by the artist, but instead was attributed to a collective, such as in the case of the Rebel Chicano Art Front, which became the Royal Chicano Air Force. Other times, as in the story of Rupert Garcia, he recounts that the posters that he and the collective made for particular strikes were made quickly and sold to obtain bail money for people jailed, especially during the 1968 student strike at San Francisco State College. Now, referring back to Corrigan, the question I asked was, so what is Chavez's and Huerta's visual rhetorical representation? What is the farm worker's visual rhetoric? It is common to see Chavez and Huerta often among the farm workers in images, whether marching or in dialogue or other community activity. This visual speaks to their participation and presence not just as leaders, but also as one among them, the common man or the common woman. That is an icon that has moved forward to today. In looking at pictures of Chavez, probably one of the most notable things about pretty much, I'd say 90% of the pictures of Chavez, what you see is a man of quiet demeanor, of serene facial expression. And that is a layer of on top of what Chavez's inside really was, because of his he wasn't reluctant to take on a fight. That quiet demeanor, though, has equated his fasts and his selflessness to the sufferings of Christ, not unlike that of images or the practices of Gandhi or even Martin Luther King, men who were depicted as introspective, calm, and good. Another layer is Chavez's Catholicism and the support by the Catholic Church and other denominations. Those were layers that the farm workers and others, you know, in houses of worship found easy to accept. It wasn't something where he was the wild-eyed brown man who was out marching against the white man. Not immune to gender politics that were present in the movement, Chicana artists also contributed to the poster movement of the period. I think it's important to say here that as part of the Chicano movement, there was always a gender disruption in talks, in conversations, in plans and actions. When you hear the word machismo, for years I kind of rejected that. But the more and more I read and the more I hear from women who had been involved in labor actions or in the movement, whether student or community, there was quite a bit of sexism where women were allowed to participate. Women were allowed to participate by maybe making the coffee, by doing all the general tasks attributed to women. Chicana poster artists did not stand still for that. They went out and about and started their own colectivas. They started doing their own work, not necessarily as feminists, but as women who were part and wanted to be part of the movement. What I'm going to do here is now go through some of the images that we have at the MSU Library. I do forget this. I was actually going to bring this because I wanted to show it as an example of the type of donations that we received. This is a rare poster that sells upwards of about $500 now. And the way we got it donated was it was glued on to some foam core. But, you know, that's great and fine. We have it, but it's on foam core. This is a representation that Andy Zermenio did at Cesar Chavez's request, and it was probably one of the first images that the UFW or UFWOC was known for. Both Zermenio and Chavez were kind of together pretty much at the beginning, but you hardly ever hear about this man. He was working another job, and he was volunteering his work to the union after hours. But that really is like an iconic image of the UFW in its early years. One of the things that characterizes Zermenio's work is the movement that he draws into his work. In this one, it's representing, the movement represents an active and an engaged union membership. You can tell by the hair of the woman, that's windswept, and the furling of the flag. Here, it's a comparison, or actually just two of his images that showed the same type of style that he wanted to represent as an active union, something that wasn't static, something where the membership was active. Red was also a color that was used in the posters that always invoked emotion, and it was basic to many of the posters and publications of the UFW. As you can see right here, I mean, in both of them you can actually see movement, or not actually see, it's portrayed as movement, but also the big lettering and punctuation on the huelga sign. dictates movement. The jutting chins of the flag bearers also portray a forward movement. The handshake below the UFWOC on the poster to your right represents mutual action. Visual rhetoric is hard at play here with multiple dialogues and discussions on the front side of this two-sided poster. The most striking is this older woman at the top center of the print that's shown as exhausted by work or ailing from some illness. To the viewer, it brings home the message of health care that the union was fighting for, as well as the housing conditions as indicated in that picture lower right. The dialogue that's happening here is that the poster is projecting a message, and you, the receiver, are obviously seeing that there's things that are happening. And being familiar with the history of the farm worker, or even actually labor history to some extent, you will see that the child, you know, child labor law is talking to you right there. The short-handled hoe was a type of activity, a type of work that was outlawed just because it was so brutally hard. But then also you have over here off to the right, this right here, I wish, is there a pointer here?
I'm not sure if there is.
Okay. Where the Teamster goons are, the goons. and just sitting there watching, they're watching you. To me, I and maybe it's because of my having known the history of the Teamsters to a small extent, made me feel very uncomfortable. The rhetoric of marches and strikes underscores this visual, and although in silhouette, you can see that the flags are flying at the lower part of the poster. The backside of this poster also provides visual cues without oppositional text. The bottle up or bottle down speak to the consumer or the co-discussant, which is you, of which labels or farms are union-friendly and which aren't. A boycott Safeway statement is at the bottom of the poster, and it's, I think it was folded under or something. But obviously it's, you know, I think a reason stands that an upright bottle is okay and an upside down bottle is not. That's part of the visual rhetoric, the visual conversation that you're having with that poster. The grape, lettuce, and Gallo wine boycotts were promoted in regions that included the Midwest and the Northeast. We had a campus office here. Actually, I know that he came here, but their office was on Michigan Avenue, I think. So it included the Midwest and the Northeast. And just about 6 months ago, we had the person who ran the Northeast office, Marcos Munoz, here at MSU. He came to speak also for the opening of the Cesar Chavez film at NCG Cinemas. This basically just shows, I don't know if you can see it very well, but there were 8 offices in Michigan. And of course, Lansing being one of them, and Southeast Detroit had 4 of them: Adrian, Ann Arbor, Detroit, and Flint, or I'm sorry, Ypsilanti. So it was a very good state for Chavez to be working in. He always felt at home here. His supporters were labor, students, and housewives, but the student population in particular. Um, The UFWOC and later UFW printed posters that include themes like the incarceration of farm workers, the abuse at the hands of police of farm workers, and this one in particular is of the Lamont Arvin strike when eight people were jailed. Their actions are not stilled by their incarceration as it's portrayed by the wave in the flag in the background. Having referenced the artist collectives that supported the farm worker movement before and their production, the Royal Chicano Air Force was among those that employed color, humor, and imagery to reach their audience. The RCAF was, like I mentioned before, a collective whose name started out as the Rebel Chicano Art Front. Founding members Jose Montoya and Esteban Vigil, later joined by other graphic artists, produced various posters for UFW actions and often kept the iconic Thunderbird on their work, showing support and their connection to the Union. The UFW eagle here can be seen in the red borders of this print along the side towards the bottom, and as a seal at the top right corner of the poster with a yellow background there. It was designed by founding member Ricardo Favela, obviously promoting the RCAF Centro activities. In this silkscreen poster, Favela... in this silkscreen poster, two calaveras or calacas, or what we know as skeletons, and Dia de los Muertos type stuff, two men discuss a dripping silkscreen frame. RCAF posters are said to have high visual impact value. They are highly political, touching on issues from gang violence to war, and of course, in it all, promoting the UFW actions with UFW eagle accents on the posters, you know, like I mentioned, the borders and that seal up there. Although unsigned, this poster titled Solidaridad Campesinos is the work of RCAF member Juanishi Orozco. Again, there is a movement with the eagle in the background, as you can see in black. The DG on the hat is supposedly an indication of the DiGiorgio strike that was underway at the time. Again, it was not really signed, but Juanishi Orozco was interviewed by one of the California schools who's doing an oral history project on mural poster artist, and it was attributed to him at that point. This one I really like. It's called Hasta la Victoria, or Until Victory. It was truly a collaboration between two brothers, Louis the Foot Gonzalez, or actually Luis Gonzalez, and his brother, Hector. Hector was a photographer, or had taken a photograph of a Union activist with a bullhorn and the flag. And Louis cut it out, or did whatever it was he did, put it as a silk screen, and on the page he typed the words, long, live, strike, and tomorrow. And to me, I'm just really impressed that anyone before a whiteout, you know, could do that great of typing. If you don't know what whiteout is, do you know what whiteout is? Do you know what whiteout is? Yeah, I don't think she does. You're young? Oh, yeah. It's a correction fluid. Okay. I think this is probably one of my favorite just because of how intricate it is and how simple it speaks to anyone who's looking at at it as to what is actually happening. A bullhorn says it all. Icons of the movement in articles have been discussed as these. The Virgin of Guadalupe. Virgin of Guadalupe was always at the forefront in a banner along with the UFW flag and the American flag. The newspaper El Malcriado, but more so I think someone missed the point, and I think it was the characters in the comic strip Don Sotaco, El Patroncito, and El Coyote that were really, if anything was going to be iconic from there, it would have been those characters. The theater troupe that started entertaining the strikers on flatbed trucks is also called as an icon of the UFW, I Don't Agree, and of course the short hoe. I think that probably if the short hoe was iconic, I think it's so far removed in the UFW's past that is forgotten. But for me, I think what's really iconic, what has stood as the icons of the UFW that people still well recognize today are going to be the Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, and the Thunderbird Eagle. This poster is from 1994, I believe. And you find that even though the height of what we considered the Great Boycott and the Lettuce Boycott, we sort of got past that, you see that people are still using the boycott eagle, mainly because it's recognized as a symbol of Chicano identification or some codification, that it was used by student and community groups across the country, even though there was not anything particular related to the UFW or Cesar Chavez. In this particular poster, and this is... you'll see the wrinkles in the poster, but you know that's for par. Sometimes when we get community member donations, and I was so happy to see that MSU is the only one who's not getting materials like this, because some posters the part of the image is missing, but ours is intact, just a little bit curled. This one was at U of M. For Chicano History Week. Cesar Chavez. I think Chavez, Corrigan in one of her articles talks about when someone becomes the icon, not necessarily just part of a movement, but becomes the icon for the movement. And I think what we see here is one of the types of pictures that anyone will recognize as Cesar Chavez and that recognize him as the movement. Even though he's been gone, 20 years, where some leaders kind of fade away, he's still at the head of iconography for the UFW. Dolores Huerta is the one who has not only been moving or continuing to move the message of the UFW forward as well as her own foundation, but it's hard to separate her from the UFW. Barbara Carrasco is the graphic artist who did this print. She was concerned with the plight of oppressed women, and she, Barbara was, and she would draw and work them. But she also celebrated strong women and women who have changed the world and role models like Dolores Huerta. This 1999 homage to her friend, labor organizer and human activist, she's become an iconic representation of perhaps being the most important Chicana activist of our time. She says, Carrasco says, I did a beautiful job on Dolores because I love her, and I've never met anyone like her. In speaking of this work as one of her most important works to date, she says, there are so many icons of men and icons of women painted by men that I wanted, as a woman, to create an iconic image of Dolores to recognize her as an equal of Cesar Chavez and historically the most important negotiator for the United Farm Workers. No one's arguing that. Even Chavez said that himself. Carrasco mindfully selected the colors of the serigraph, the yellow ochre for Dolores's face to represent sunshine, the essence of her energy, a rose-colored blouse to symbolize her femininity and gentleness, combined with her unwavering support of women, and finally, to recognize Dolores's lifelong commitment to farm workers, Carrasco selected a background of mint green to illustrate growing plants, agriculture, and life itself. Other images of UFW women include this anonymous and generalized representation of a union member with the flag in hand and wearing a headscarf, again, furling indicating movement, and purse strapped on shoulder. This woman's size does indicate one can, indicates of one who can hold her own in a march. She's not depicted as frail. She's not tiny or ill, but she is someone who's very active in the marching. Just like the RCAF, other supporters use the iconic Thunderbird Eagle to promote fundraising and awareness for and about the union. For this particular poster, there's only two that we know of, and MSU has one. We have this version, and the other one, I can't remember. It's a Bay Area poster that has, in black, it has a different date and a different location. So I'm really pleased that we were able to get that. Again, another icon in the advertising. This one is a union advertisement, the eagle itself. It's interesting about the eagle. Andy Zermenio, who did the that very first image, was shown the eagle by Cesar Chavez. And in an interview, Zermenio says, yeah, you know, I kind of worked on it. I kind of brought the neck down a little bit because it was sticking. It was long and it actually looked like a turkey. So that was kind of funny. But anyway, so this particular piece is actually a smaller flyer. But the connection here is Radio Campesina was actually established, developed by a former MSU employee. His name was Julio Guerrero, Julio Cesar Guerrero. Julio was going around and working Pacifica Radio and these setting up radio stations in the Southwest when he got a call from Cesar Chavez asking him to go set up KUFW. This is from the Julio Guerrero collection as well. For lettuce, there's all these, you know, images that you see and stuff, but what I've been able to find mainly the most interesting are the buttons, the political buttons. But as far as posters go, Amado Peña did this one. It's a little scene poster representing the lettuce boycott. It's a bleeding head of lettuce with a bullet hole piercing it and the wall behind it. Shots on the picket line, you know, that was one of the least of the things that were happening there, but it's a message he wanted to get out, as well as how lechuga or lettuce in Spanish. Benia now is a significant graphic artist who kind of transcended the boycott movement and Chicano art with his expressing with his work expressing the indigenous side of his culture. For grapes, Milton Glaser came up with this political cartoon on the left, and he went color with it, and it became a well-distributed poster as well. Both of them speak, well, of course, this one more obviously, the one on the left more obviously, about the pesticides in food, but that one, I think just by the fact that it's a skull, you know, and it's telling you don't eat grapes, what the message is there, what that conversation is. The next two are probably two of the better known posters or popular images from the Great Boycott Movement. This particular one is speaking a couple of, or it's telling us a couple of different things. It's referencing the indigeneity of the person, a representative of the farm worker, and the crushing of the grapes that are bleeding. It's an image that is not passive. It's not one that is standing still and eating grapes, but rather objecting and contesting what's going on in the fields. This one. Esther Hernandez is a well-known graphic artist in the Chicano movement. She herself was a farm worker, and the questions that she had about the effects of pesticides on agricultural workers is what prompted her to create Sun Mad. Her posters have been controversial. Obviously, that would be if you're agribusiness and you know, you're seeing your image co-opted from a beautiful farm girl to a skeleton. She recounts how Sun Mad began when she went home to visit her mother in 1979, reading the articles that she saved about water contamination in the barrio. She says, after thinking about it for 2 years and remembering my work as a farmhand, I focused my anger on the dangers of growing grapes for the raisin industry. I focused on something personal, the Sun-Made box. Slowly, I began to realize how to transform the Sun-Made and unmask the truth behind the wholesome figures of agribusiness. Sun-Mad evolved out of my anger and my fear of what would happen to my family, my community, and to myself. So I think that's pretty powerful. I mean, just everything that it tells you visually, and especially knowing and recognizing the Sun-Mad box logo. This one, the Great Boycotts, this was just typical, cheap to make, easy to distribute, and it could hit pretty much any region of the country. Strawberries, there's one poster that I think speaks to the strawberry boycott, the campaign, the strawberry campaign in Watsonville, and I think this is the one. There's been others, but not as well done or as creative as this. This speaks to wages, it speaks to support, and of course the icon for the UFW. I'm ending with Flock because Flock is regional. Even though they have not had the graphic success that the UFW has had, or the graphic support. There's a couple of posters that I think really hit the point and hit the message right where it needs to go. In this one, this is one of the things that they're still working on, and it's the Reynolds tobacco campaign. After, I think, 4 years, they finally sat down to speak to them. I don't know how much of a resolution came of that. But you can see here the smoke, and in the smoke it says, I can't read it with my glasses or without my glasses, pesticides up top, and I think racism down here, and I'm not quite sure what's on the curl. The hat of, it's, you know, kind of funny because it's not even like braceros are wearing hats like that anymore, but farm workers' tobacco is on there, and of course on the butt of the cigarette, or on the filter, is Camel, and R.J. Reynolds is on the side. So basically R.J. Reynolds is stomping out the farm worker. This is one, this is a pretty rare poster that shows the UFW and Flock together on the same image. Here you have the iconography of the worker spread across the U.S. Short hoe over here. But you also have, right here, you have the UFW eagle. And over here you have the Flock eagle. Valdemar Velasquez there in the New York area, and Dolores Huerta and Caesar over in Washington, even though they were California. And perhaps the most significant one is this one. This particular one just, I think, says it all. If there was one that they wanted to put out or should have put out, it would have been this one, because I think at that point, Andy Warhol's Campbell's Soup series was still, you know, pretty much in the mind of folks. And I just think it just says it all. We have one in here at MSU at the libraries, but it's not in color. So, but basically, in summing up, I guess, images and iconography are strong, and there's things that we still will carry with us, even after Dolores Huerta is gone, after issues with farm workers hopefully are settled. But what these icons actually represent in our collective history and in labor history. So thank you very much.
Well, that was fabulous, and I'm sure that folks have questions, as usual. I've got a few, but let me see if there are other questions first. Question or comment? Let me ask one that maybe occurred to other people. The Thunderbird comes from the original Mexican eagle, or does it?
Yeah, well, there was a... they were trying to get the Mexican eagle, but how it developed that way, that's not how the Mexican eagle represents when you see it. But yeah, that was the genesis, or that's where they were trying to get it from.
And it's interesting because the Mexican eagle always has a snake in its, mm-hmm. you know, so it's interesting that there's a lot of iconography that could have picked up on, you know, the snake of capitalism or the snake of the bosses or whatever, mm-hmm. exploitation. And I find it interesting that they foregone, you know, they forewent that,
yeah.
In relation to how the icon actually came up over time.
Yeah, I don't think that they were necessarily schooled historians is the thing. I think that probably Flock has the closest image to the Mexican Eagle than what the UFW one does. That one is less generalized in the sketching. You can still see a lot of point in the beak, the mouth open, the nose, and the feathers back here and around the neck. So I would think that this is probably closer to the Mexican Eagle than the UFW one.
Other questions or comments? One thing that, could you talk a little bit, the skeletons, links to the Day of the Dead, doesn't it?
That's
in
correct.
Terms
yeah.
of the iconography mm-hmm.
yeah.
as well?
It does. And I don't know if it was because, I don't think it had anything to do with the time of the year that they were doing it, but I think that there was a lot of props given to people like Guadalupe Posada, Jose Guadalupe Posada, and a couple of the other Mexican graphic artists that mm-hmm. that used the calavera for political purposes to convey a political message. And I suspect that that's probably where the use of this particular one came from, because they did study Mexican art. The Mexican graphic artists. Mm-hmm. So,
other questions? Because I'm going to keep on going if no one else has one. Would you talk that one poster, the Hasta la Victoria?
Hasta la Victoria.
Actually, I can't help but believe that it looks like Fidel because of the hat. I was just struck. Really? Big time by that.
Hasta la Victoria.
In terms of.
Did I miss it? Maybe I did. It was like my
no,
favorite.
No, it's backwards.
It's back. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it had more like a cowboy hat look than. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, I see that as someone kind of sort of turned, and the hat, the backside of the hat, and the front, yeah. I can see how it could be like.
Well, especially since they're raising Mao and other things, it very well may be that.
Yeah, it'd be so cool to see Fidel Castro at a UFW function. I don't think he'd come, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I can see how that can be.
And would you talk a little bit about sainthood? I mean, in terms of, you talked about the Virgin of Guadalupe, but Chavez, I mean, I think that the iconography of Chavez to a great degree is really about his role as, kind of much more a saint, almost a religious fervor around Chavez. Do you find that in a lot of the posters that you're seeing or different depictions?
Yeah, I just think in the way that Che Guevara was photogenic in a certain way, I think that Chavez was photogenic in a different way. And I think that what cameras captured in Chavez was his eyes, mm-hmm. the quietness of his eyes, and just how he's relaxed, whereas Che, and they say that the Chicano poster movement was kind of, had its growth out of the Cuban poster movement, and the Cubans were in love with Che, actually. He also was very photogenic, like where you would see his eyes smiling, or they had a sensuousness to them that I'm not quite sure what they were saying, but it's a different eye gaze than what Chavez has, and I don't know if it's because of the lids and he's more relaxed or what, or maybe that. Everyone loved Che, men, women, and what is it? They were they were saying that after Chad died, the posters that were being created, they were in the line of Jesucristo instead of Jesucristo, like Jesus Christ. It was like Jesucristo. So he was elevated in a sense to sainthood by, or what would be the equivalent of sainthood by some activists, I guess.
Other questions or comments? Please stop me now. One last one then is that original poster that you said was the first, the way back at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck, and maybe others were struck as well, that that poster on the left is far more revolutionary than a lot of the posters that come later in terms of a much more Che-like character on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And Chavez always looked like a farm worker. He always looked like a, you know, kind of salt of the earth person, and not angry, as you indicated, in terms of nonviolence and everything else. I mean, I find the one on the left interesting just because of the fact that it almost harks to a far more revolutionary movement.
Yeah, it does. It does. There's the interview with Zermenio where he's talking about this other illustration that he did. And, you know, I've seen it, and I wasn't quite sure what to think of it. I was surprised it was him that did it. But it's this fat Mexican. It's a fat Mexican with the bandoleras, the bullets across the thing. And he's got two rifles, the Mexican sombrero, and he's standing like this. And he says, I don't know, boycott or something, cabrones. You know, and cabrones is like not a good word, like you're kind of cussing at somebody. And he says, yeah, and Caesar looked at it and says, well, we are nonviolent, so put corks at the end of the rifle. So, yeah, okay, you know, so he drew like the string cork and the cork ending part. But, you know, the poster remained, so, you know, but yeah, you don't see anger really in many of the UFW posters, and that definitely is like aggression.
Well, let us, oh, yes, you have a question, go ahead.
Oh, really?
Maybe because I was young, yeah. Or I wasn't drinking or something, I don't know, but I didn't ever hear about that. And so I don't understand the upside down. What was that all about?
I think that it's just kind of representative of what's right and what's wrong. Well, an upward a bottle like this is that's correct. And, you know, that's not right, right? And I think that visual image, that connection kind of has you engaged in what they call the visual conversation or the with that poster. And in the poster, the upside down bottle has the names of all the wines and companies that you shouldn't buy, like Boone's Farm or... I read about it. Boone's Farm or a strawberry something.
Strawberry Hill.
Strawberry Hill, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the good old days.
Yeah.
But and Gallo especially. I mean, and one quick story, but maybe if any of you are Lash LaRue fans, who was such an iconic professor here, LaRue and his son, when his son was very, very small, would stand at opposite ends of the Goodrich produce section, and his son would yell, "Dad, can I get some grapes?" And Lash at the other end would yell, "No, son, we're not getting any scab grapes." And they would do this, you know, every week when they would go shopping just for the fun of it. One MSU connection, by the way, that Deanna I think would have mentioned if I had pushed her is that Baltimore Velasquez from the Farm Labor Organizing Committee received an honorary doctorate from Michigan State University just a few years ago.
That's correct.
So Flock, as Midwestern farm workers, Flock has always been based in Toledo, Ohio.
That's correct.
Rather than in the Imperial Valley as right. Chavez and Huerta were.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, he was here this spring because one of the ways that he funds or fundraises is that he's also a singer. Mm-hmm. And he'll get like a trio or a quartet and play a dance and raise money that way.
What's his name?
Baldemar, Velasquez with a Z at the end, Velasquez. Yeah, so, and actually, you know, he sings really good. He sings really, really good. But he came here, actually, for the Latin is America program. Every year they have the Latin American Studies and School of Music, College of Music, excuse me, will have a program. This past year it was a Tex-Mex. And they had a round table panel type thing where there were four people talking about Tex-Mex or conjunto music in Michigan, in the Midwest, and its importance to the cultural scene, basically, I guess. So, again, very, very knowledgeable about his music. He studied under Gandhi, I believe.
Well, why don't we give Deanna another round of applause, please? What a wonderful presentation.
Thank you. Thanks.
And see you a week from Friday for Ruben Martinez and Daniel Velez, and then later in the month for our thing on the affirmative action in the construction industry. Thanks for coming out.